Hi, I am a 2-mana 08. Kira!
Hi, I'm a 3-mana 7-2. Maya, and welcome back to another episode of Raise the Standard, a Magic the Gathering podcast about Magic's best format. Today, we are talking about Foundations. We're doing a retrospective episode and looking at the most common and most impactful cards that have come through Standard in the 3 months since Foundations release.
It's very much a preliminary retrospective because we are going to have Foundations in Standard for the next 5 years until 2029. So it's very much a preliminary, where have we come from?
I totally agree. And with Foundations being this foundational set, if you'll forgive me, it's more of a litmus test for the future. Having a look at the cards that are powerful enough to exist in what feels a little bit like Bloomburrow Duskmourn block constructed, using that as a litmus test to project forward what we think the strong baseline cards and archetypes in the format will be is as much a part of this episode as looking back on what it has done over the last quarter.
Well, look, there's no time like the present. Let us look at the foundation that's been built so far, and let's have a look at some of the most impactful cards that we've seen over the last 3 months in Foundations coming into Standard.
We're talking about four cards today. Well, we're focusing on four cards today. The first of which, perhaps unsurprisingly, is a colorless land.
Very ubiquitous.
Yes, easy to slot into any 1, 2, and even some 3-color decks. Today we are talking about Soulstone Sanctuary. Soulstone Sanctuary is a colorless land that taps to add 1 colorless mana. But it also has the ability, for 4 mana of any color, this land becomes a 3/3 creature with vigilance and all creature types. It is still a land.
Most importantly, as we mentioned in the last episode, there is no until end of turn text on Soulstone Sanctuary. So once it has been animated into a creature land, it stays a creature, unlike the restless creature land cycle.
This effect is something that is relatively new in the context of Magic design space. There was a mistake long, long ago in, I believe, Portal 3 Kingdoms of a card called Riding the Delu Horse, which gave something +2/+2 in horsemanship, but not until end of turn. And they haven't really done it since. A good example of the old man lands that don't do things permanently, but do end at end of turn, is actually some quite powerful cards, including things like Raging Ravine and Creeping Tar Pit.
This is also like Celestial Colonnade,
cycle. Very, 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 very famous cards that have been very powerful in the context of Magic's history. The fact that this doesn't go away at end of turn makes this card comparatively much stronger. You could argue that it exposes it to untimely removal in a way that, or untimely sorcery speed removal in a way that lands that cease to become creatures at end of turn do not. It also means that you only need to commit the mana investment once, which is extremely powerful. As a result, this card is featured in most of the Dimir variants, so that being Dimir Midrange and Dimir Bounce. It's featured in Golgari Midrange, and it is even featured in some of the mono-red and mono-black aggressive decks that use it as a final aggressive push once the Dimir or other mid-range decks have forced them to trade 1 for 1. Because it is very low opportunity cost to play in your mana base, it is reasonably costed, and there are less pure grindy mirrors, and the format is less slow, it has taken that spot in a lot of decks that Fountain Port used to exist in. It paints this image of this more assertive metagame, which we are very much seeing, even with the prevalence of decks that are looking to nickel and dime you, like the Esper Pixie deck or Blue-Black Bounce.
The other great thing about Soulstone Sanctuary is that piece of text on there that reads, it is a creature land with all creature types. The Dimir list loves Soulstone Sanctuary for Kaito's plus ability to create an emblem that says ninjas you control get +1/+1 because Soulstone Sanctuary is a ninja. It also sees some amount of play in those Boros decks even because it's a mouse. It is all creature type. So it's a largely ubiquitous land. You can play it in almost any deck that you need to and can push you kind of over that final edge.
Having all creature types is very, very useful. It also means that it is an outlaw. So Shoot the Sheriff cannot target it, which is relevant in mono-black mid-range decks. I think this card is likely to be a stalwart. I think this is sticking around in standard until it rotates out or the format becomes either too quick or too slow for it. So I think if the format becomes a turn three hyper-aggressive aggro mirror craziness deck where the actual cost of playing a colorless land is too high, then perhaps we won't see this card. Or if the format gets too slow and the slot is better filled by something like Fountain Port or a card that is designed to grind into the longer game. But in terms of the classic mid-range mirrors that we associate with standard, while admittedly less so today, I think Soulstone Sanctuary is likely to be an ever-present feature for its time in standard.
Soulstone Sanctuary is a good card.
Card is good, yeah.
Card is
turns
good.
Out.
Well, so we've got a ubiquitous land that is seen across multiple different decks. What else from Foundations have we seen making marks in the format?
The next card that I wanted to talk about is Burst Lightning, or as I like to call it, Shock and Fireball.
It is both of those things.
It is both of those things, if perhaps slightly toned down. It is featured in aggressively slanted red decks. So we're talking about decks like Mono Red, Green Red, White Red Mice, White Red Burn, and even some versions of Otters that are looking to lean more into the prowess game plan than the combo game plan. It is admittedly not as ubiquitous as Torch the Tower, due to it not having the exile clause for things like the enduring creatures. And as a result, it is only really played in decks where your opponent's life total is a meaningful and compelling upside to play the card. Because otherwise, from a sideboarding perspective, Torch the Tower does tend to operate as a strict upgrade.
Burst Lightning as well has that dynamic side to it to do either 2 damage or 4 damage to any target. And drawing this in the late game to deal that final 3 points of damage to your opponent's face is a better payoff than drawing your Torch the Tower.
And hitting face is, turns out, very important in a lot of red decks, in a lot of decks where you're trying to close out the game. They say the last point of life is the only one that matters, but that isn't strictly speaking true because the pressure of having cards like Burst Lightning that are relatively difficult to interact with in your deck provides you with an element of inevitability that something like a pure turn creature sideways aggressive deck does not necessarily have in the face of something like a Soulstone Sanctuary. The ability to use Burst Lightning both to remove large blockers, to remove a small blocker early in the game to push through more damage with your aggressive creatures, or to turn into a fireball and hit your opponent for 4 is what makes this card so versatile and so strong, with the caveat that it has to be in a deck that cares about your opponent's life total, at least in the current metagame. This may not hold true when cards that focus on graveyard recursion are not as ubiquitous in standard, but given that Duskmourn was relatively recently, I think we will be waiting a long time before Burst Lightning has the potential to slide in and take over from Torch the Tower in that sideboard interactive slot.
The best kind of removal is opponent removal.
Agreed, agreed. As long as there are aggressive red-based decks in the format, Burst Lightning will continue to be an important role-playing card. It fits the deck really well, it's cheap and efficient, and it has enough versatility and enough late-game power that you would be hard-pressed to find a burn spell short of literal lightning bolt that is going to be competing for its slot.
Moving on from aggressive red decks, you've got 2 cards here that tickle my little green heart so well. And the first of which that you've got here is Maelstrom Pulse. And this card has absolutely excited and delighted me with its inclusion in Standard.
Golgari, I think, was perhaps the biggest winner from Foundations, as it got some very, very powerful and versatile tools. It is funny then that it has fallen off quite substantially from being a tier one deck in the previous format due to how powerful the blue cards are, but the power of the deck itself has actually gone up nonetheless. Looking at Maelstrom Pulse, it is pretty much exclusively going to be relegated to black-green mid-range decks. It is a great all-round answer to problematic permanents and token swarms, and when you hit two cards that your opponent cast with this, it feels so good. It is slow, though. It is 3 mana, 2 colored pips, sorcery speed. Playing this card is a real cost, which is why a lot of the time you'll see Golgari decks playing one, maybe two copies across the 75. But the reason that it's on this list is because if you are playing a green-black deck, you are always going to have at least one. Because it provides you an out to many, many a scary permanent. This is, I think, one of the best answers to new upcoming, probably in Standard card, the Aether Spark. A card that is notoriously going to be difficult to interact with once attached to a creature that Maelstrom Pulse deals with cleanly and effectively without allowing your opponent to generate much value.
The key words here, for those of you not familiar with the card, it's a sorcery speed, destroy target non-land permanent and all other permanents with the same name as that permanent. And so Maya is pointing out here that if you are able to destroy a Heartfire hero and the other two Heartfire heroes that are on the battlefield and you 1-for-3 your opponent, it's an upside. If you even 1-for-2 your opponent, you have succeeded in what I would say casting Maelstrom Pulse successfully. And what I see this card doing, especially in the new Aetherdrift standard, is in a world of Simulacrum synthesizers and construct tokens, you can destroy a construct token and all other construct tokens because they all share the same name.
Maelstrom Pulse is one of those cards that the reason for its strength is more its downside than its upside, or rather, more its ceiling than its floor. At worst, this is a 1-for-1. You trade with an opponent's creature, a difficult to interact with permanent, and that as a baseline for a Golgari deck, which is looking more or less to trade with you 1-for-1 and get you on card quality. I like to say the Golgari strategy is to 1.5-for-1 you over and over and over again until it grinds you to dust. The Maelstrom Pulse's upside of being almost a board wipe and being particularly effective against tokens, especially decks like Mono White and the new Simulacrum Synthesizers decks that we expect will appear with the release of more affinity cards, more high-powered artifacts, and frankly, Simulacrum Synthesizer needed maybe one or two other pieces prior to Aetherdrift to become strong, and it has gotten plenty more than that.
This is famously an artifact set.
Yes, very much so, very much so, which is something that Simulacrum Synthesizer is going to be able to capitalize on. And Simulacrum Synthesizer is already an expensive card, folks, and has a very limited print run, I believe only printed in Big Score.
Yes.
So if you are looking to play the artifact deck in Standard, I would pick them up sooner rather than later.
100% agree. The other thing, too, in the Golgari removal spell slot is we had Terra Sunder in Dominaria United. And that was at instant speed, but it was 4 mana as opposed to 3 in order to exile target non-land permanent. Otherwise, it was exile target artifact or enchantment. And the reason I bring this up is because we are losing Terra Sunder this year. We are losing Terra Sunder to rotation this year. And so Maelstrom Pulse being a part of the Golgari core for at least the next 5 years, as we've mentioned, puts it in a strong spot.
In a format that is looking to be a little bit lower to the ground than it has been historically, a card like Maelstrom Pulse being 1 mana less, even if it is at sorcery speed, is going to perhaps even operate more efficiently than Terra Sunder has historically. Because while it is instant speed, 4 mana is a lot, And Golgari is, for the most part, looking to play at sorcery speed. It is looking to tap out for its creatures that are better than yours and kill you that way, as opposed to doing tricky Dimir Flash things and holding up phantom interferences and cutdowns. I think Maelstrom Pulse is going to be an ever-present fixture in black-green sideboards for as long as there are scary 4-plus mana permanents. When this card trades up in mana, or when it hits multiple permanents, it becomes one of the best interactive pieces in the game.
Additionally, when you're able to hit multiple tokens, it feels so good.
Hitting three fish tokens that have been made off a fountain port feels so good. It feels very, very silly. It can also target problematic non-land, non-creature permanents. It is a good way to get rid of a Sheltered by Ghosts. It gets around, well, it will allow you to take care of things like No More Lies, which in bounce decks can pose a real problem to Golgari.
Additionally, something that Maelstrom Pulse does really well in the current standard meta is all of those offspring tokens have the same name as their parent.
I didn't even think about that. That's so scary.
So anytime your opponent has cast a Pawpatch Recruit with offspring, you get to destroy two permanents with Maelstrom Pulse because they have the same name.
It is not difficult to imagine a world where you cast a Maelstrom Pulse and blow up four Manifold Mice. That being said, this is a spell that gets worse in multiples. The first Maelstrom Pulse is really good. The second Maelstrom Pulse is likely just to be a one for one. And the more copies of Maelstrom Pulse you are playing in your deck means the less likely you are to get the ideal amount of value from the card for each copy. This is likely to be a 2 of across green-black 75s for the life of its period in standard, but I think it is unlikely that it is ever going to become a 4 of main board card short of a ubiquity of token stacks or a bizarre world where green-black is short on non-land permanent removal, which I think is unlikely at best.
Forget Golgari, which is not something I say very often, but let's forget Golgari. Mono green, Llanowar Elves.
Llanowar Elves, very famously powerful card. It is currently only seeing play in Golgari, so let's not forget too quickly. But I think that it is unlikely to remain that way. The more powerful three drops that you print into a standard set, the better this proactive card gets. It is a card that suffers from being in the same standard format as some of the best one mana removal in all of Magic. It is contending with Burst Lightning, Cut Down,
Torch the Tower. Overwhelming Remorse can get down to one mana. There's a lot of graveyard decks that are playing that. And then not even saying one mana removal spells, a removal heavy format as it is.
Very, very removal heavy. You need to be able to interact in this format very, very quickly on turns one and two. Because the card quality is so high across a 3-year format, you will get buried under the value that is provided by something like Glissa or an Enduring Curiosity or even a Unstoppable Slasher.
At some level, though, there is a, not necessarily a benefit, but in the same way that we spoke about Vinwixt in our last episode, 2 mana, your opponent discards a removal spell. This is early game, 1 mana, opponent discards a removal spell, which in a world where you're trying to cast your 3 drops on turn 2 puts you on a bit of the back foot, but does potentially open the way for your better cards later on to survive.
There's an old Magic adage that is always bolt the bird. And that is because being able to play a 3-drop on turn 2 is fundamentally such a powerful and even broken thing to do, and has been a common and ubiquitous and historically proven way to win games of Magic for as long as there has been mana acceleration. My expectation is that this is going to be a 4 of in at least one high-tier deck for its entire life in Standard. This card is just that strong. This card demands an answer, and if you don't answer it, will end the game very quickly, not through its own effort, but by the things that it allows you to cast ahead of curve.
At some level, Llanowar Elves is never going to be a bad card. In a world where you can feasibly cast Glissa on turn two, mwah, Llanowar Elves is such a powerful card, and you put your opponent in the position to anticipate a turn two Glissa and force them to deal with your Llanowar Elves or deal with the Glissa. And there is a world in which letting the Glissa resolve to then destroy it is the right play for your opponent. Either way, you are getting a removal spell out of their hand.
I totally agree, which is why Llanowar Elves does actually fit so well in mid-range strategies that it's trying to nickel and dime your opponent, because cheap, powerful removal comes at such a premium. Having to spend it on a 1-mana 1-1 is a real cost. The other point I wanted to make is that as time goes on in the standard format, while we're never going to see Llanowar Elves and Burst Lightning in different formats because they were printed in the same sets, we are eventually going to see cards like Cut Down, Rotate Out. And when that happens, I expect the power of Llanowar Elves to get better, because playing other worse removal than cards like Cut Down becomes a real cost in deck building, which means that playing your Llanowar Elves is forcing your opponent to make suboptimal deck building choices and thus increases your odds against them. It is always a little bit of a fine dance when we talk about deck building costs and metagames, and this is a topic that we'll get into more as we continue to hopefully provide insightful content on things like the standard metagame. Trust us in saying that making concessions in your deck to accommodate the existence of powerful cards in other players' decks, inadvertently making the core of your deck weaker, is a really significant way that you can lose games of Magic. I think Llanowar Elves is perhaps the card in Standard that speaks most to its future. I think this is the card, if I had to pick any of them, that I think is going to see more play in the future post the large rotation at the end of this year than any other card, because it is so ubiquitous and so powerful and feeds into strategies that already have a strong edge in any standard environment, but also in this standard environment.
Llanowar Elves is a card for the past, present, and future of Magic.
It makes me think that Llanowar Elves, Findhorn Elves, and Elvish Mystic are the three fates, like past, present, and future of Magic.
You mentioned the red-green elf deck in the Tarkir block. You'll never guess where we're going next.
I was under the impression we were going to Final Fantasy.
No, the next set is actually Tarkir Dragonstorm.
Oh, amazing.
So there's a world in which we see a resurgence in this red-green elf deck, and Llanowar Elves, as you've said, and as we're all saying, just gets better.
I certainly hope so, because I love me a red-green ramp deck. We ultimately have only had Foundations for 3 months, and it has already had a significant impact on Standard, but we haven't seen it grow into itself. With the release of Tarkir Dragonstorm and with the rotation at the end of the year, I fully expect to see Foundations grow and blossom into the foundation, if you'll forgive the term, for the series of archetypes that we expect to see in Standard and really come into its own in the way that the designers of the set intended it to. So as that time passes, I expect every deck to be playing 4, if not 8, of a card from Foundation in some capacity, because that's what it's there for. That's why it will be here for 5 years. And that winds our discussion on a 3-month review on Foundations to a close. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We do release new episodes every Monday at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And remember, by tradition, travellers touch the pillar for good luck. One day, decided to travel as well.